Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Welcome back, everybody, to the radio program, Today's Issues, on the American Family Radio Network. You can send us an email, if you'd like to, at comments@afr.net. comments@afr.net. Our website is afr.net. I'm Tim Wildman with Ray Pritchard. Ray joins me from Dallas, co-hosting the program today here on AFR. We were talking last hour with Fred and Ed, who've left the room. I don't think it's anything we said, but I think they just left because they had other things to take care of. You know what? We were talking about the debate last night. I don't know how many people ended up watching that or if it was the most viewed television. Do you know anything more on that, Ray?
Well, just that it was huge.
Right.
And that more than double the audience for Monday Night Football, which normally draws pretty well. So usually we don't get those numbers until later on the day, but it was big.
Yeah.
100 million plus people watching just in the U.S. and then many, many more around the world.
You know, we got two debates left. Do you know when the next one is?
Right. Well, okay, the next one up is not the presidential debate. The next one up is a week from tonight, the vice presidential debate from, and I've never even heard of this, Longwood University in Farmville, Virginia, between Tim Kaine and Mike Pence. Okay, that's a week from tonight. Then a week from Sunday is the second debate, and that's from Washington University in St. Louis. And the interesting thing about this second debate, Tim, is that it's in a town hall format where the questions are going to be submitted by viewers and listeners and watchers. So it's going to be a more informal kind of situation than last night. It was just the two debaters and Lester Holt. It's going to be I think a more freewheeling debate, and I think we all expect Trump to come out swinging from the opening bell at that one.
Mm-hmm.
And then the final one, by the way, is October the 19th. Well, that's the one with Chris Wallace as the moderator from University of Nevada, Las Vegas.
Well, that'll be interesting. Again, we talked last hour. However you saw the debate last night, I think the energy and the excitement has been with the Team Trump, so to speak, the Trump train. And Hillary Clinton's team has been trying to recover from the losses in the polls that they've seen in the last 2 weeks or so, 2 or 3 weeks. So they were leading. Hillary Clinton was leading in most of the polls. And now she's lost that lead in most of the polls, including some very important swing states, Florida.
So let me ask you, let me ask you too. Okay, just polish off your crystal ball. Let's go ahead about a week and a half to Sunday, October the 9th, which is the next presidential debate. If you had to guess, where do you think the polls will be? Where will the race be going into the second debate?
Well, personally, I think she's hit her ceiling. Okay.
Right.
I think she's probably not going to go down much, but she's not going to go up any. He has an opportunity to go up a little bit more, I think.
Right.
Because people may have been uncomfortable with him because of his personality volatility, if I can use two ITY words back to back.
Right.
And as more they see him, Donald Trump, I'm talking about, and they become comfortable with him as a person who is rational, yes, flamboyant at times, has a New Yorker edge with his personality, will say things that people think that shouldn't be said out loud at times. If people accept that, but they think, you know, he was a rational person who is under control, I think that's an advantage for him, which I think those people are more likely to come to his side. He's more likely to more attract people who are skeptical, who say he's not a nut, he's a rational person, versus people who are going to say, you know what, Man, I've just been undecided, and I'm just so pumped about Hillary Clinton. I just want to write a check and get a yard sign and tell all my friends and family to go for Hillary because she is the leader of the future. I just don't see that energy and sentiment out there. Not saying she couldn't win, but I would call it backing into the presidency. He hasn't made any he needs to stay on that teleprompter, you know,
right.
And they need to take the phone away from him at 9 o'clock at night, like they've been doing.
No midnight tweeting.
No, Dad, you're not tweeting. You can have your oatmeal and go to bed, but you're not tweeting anymore. You're killing us with that. So as long as he maintains if the people around him can maintain that kind of posture, then I think, as I say, I think he has an upside that she doesn't have. That's a 3-minute answer to probably what should have been a 60-second answer. What do you think about your own question?
Let me give a 30-second answer. I think that by the second debate, Trump is going to be just slightly ahead by 1 or 2 percentage points in the polls. And I think that's going to make her pretty desperate. I also think – I don't think anybody's going to pull out to a 7-point
right, no,
lead.
No.
I think it's going to be tight going all the way down to the
right.
end. And Hillary has probably already peaked. Trump has room to grow. So
right.
that is
– We agree on that, yeah.
And the only other thing you can say is I'm sure his people are saying to him, don't say anything stupid.
Right.
Don't do anything crazy.
Right.
And you're going to be the next president.
Hey, that's he didn't call her Crooked Hillary last night.
No, he didn't.
He called her Secretary Clinton. Don't you think that was
smart.
Wise?
Absolutely. Treat her with respect. No need to do any name calling on that stage.
I thought he would call her Hillary. I thought he wouldn't call her Secretary Clinton, but he did. And but it was a presidential debate, and so he wanted to not give them any reason to think that he's showing gratuitous disrespect to especially a woman. So I think probably wise to his probably team. I can see Trump in a debate, mock debate with his team in a hotel room going, I'm not calling her Secretary Clinton. I'm calling her Hillary. I might even call her Crooked Hillary, and them saying, no, you're not.
No, you're not.
No, you're not. You're calling her Secretary Clinton. Read my lips, Dad.
Right.
I can see Ivana saying that. So he did a good job of
containing himself.
Controlling himself last night. And his answer at the end was he wasn't going to talk. He was upset. And then we'll move on to our guest. You could tell – He was upset with Hillary Clinton saying, you said all these bad things, the name-calling of women, and she listed them. And he wanted to come back at her, but then I think he bit his tongue and said, you know, this is where they told me don't come back at her, but simply say, I wanted to say something tough back to Hillary Clinton when she went after me on the women thing, but I didn't because Chelsea's in the – because he didn't want to be perceived as getting too personal, I guess.
And there is a fine line there,
right?
Right. I mean, you got to have that inner bell that starts ringing when it tells you, okay, you're coming up to the line,
right?
And when you hear the bell, you got to be smart enough to stop right there, right?
And I think in his mind, he's going, this is what they coach me on. Don't get into a yelling match with personal. Even though he's saying I could have said some things that were an answer to her, but I didn't because it would have been considered mudslinging. Anyway, very interesting first debate. We have two more debates and a vice presidential debate. Right now it's just so, so close all across the country in many states. But Donald Trump has a slight lead in many of the battleground states. Again, that could change. Who knows? But right now, he has to be feeling pretty good about where he sits. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. We're going to change topics, and our guest is with us. Go ahead, Ray.
We're glad to have Dr. Shannon Warden with us, along with our good friend Gary Chapman, She and Gary Chapman have written a book called Things I Wish I'd Known Before We Became Parents. Dr. Shannon Warden is an assistant teaching professor at Wake Forest University. She also directs counseling and women's ministries at the Triad Baptist Church in Kernersville, North Carolina. Dr. Shannon Warden, welcome to Today's Issues.
Hey, Ray, Tim, I'm glad to be on with you guys.
Well, I got to say, I love your title, Things I Wish I Had Known Before We Became Parents. I look back, Shannon, and I think I didn't know very much before we had kids. Tell us about the book and tell us what you didn't know that you wish you had known.
Well, the book answers a lot of the questions that Dr. Chapman and I have heard in counseling over the years. And the questions, Ray, you're referencing, there are things that a lot of us don't know as we're going along. I think I've had a great opportunity and advantage, if you will, to learn maybe faster simply because, for one, that might mean I've made more mistakes faster. I don't know. But I think, too, just, you know, getting to work with Gary all these years and being in counseling now for several years myself, you know, you hear so much from parents. Well, I wish I learned this. I wish I had known this. I've certainly made a lot of mistakes. And that's something for me and my husband, Stephen, excuse me. You know, we really, you know, have sought that wisdom. And so the book really covers a lot of questions, everything from adjusting schedules, which is a big thing. I'll say more about that here in just a couple of seconds. Money management, keeping the marriage alive while parenting. And so probably to answer that specific question, one of the things that probably I had to learn the fastest and am continuing to learn is children take a lot of time. My husband and I tell folks we get up tired, we go to bed tired, and start again the next day, and round we go. And it's exciting, though. It doesn't matter how much time they take. There's still a great joy to us. We have 3, 11, 5, and 3 years old. So we're keeping good and busy. And so we, Gary and I, hope that parents are preparing for that as they're getting ready or in those early stages of parenting.
So, Shannon, what can parents, let's say, who are folks who are down the road further? I mean, we had 3 sons, but they're in their mid-30s now, so we're in the my wife and I are in the empty nest stage of life. How can parents who have been through it, how can we offer encouragement and help to young parents who feel overwhelmed, overstressed, overdone, tired when they get up and tired when they go to bed and all the rest? What help can we give them?
Well, you've got lots of wisdom. No matter what mistakes, you know, you may have made along the way, you still have great wisdom, in large because of mistakes. That's something, you know, while we grieve some of the mistakes we make, those mistakes actually shape us. Parents who are further down the road can give that wisdom. Of course, you might have had experiences with that. You've got to be selective in how you give that. There's certainly a relational way of doing that, and then there's a, I guess from where I'm from, we might call it a preachy way. You know, and so as you're finding those opportunities, you know, as God has given you opportunities to minister to those younger parents, those newer parents, might even be your own children, it's looking for those opportunities and in a relational, loving way, just saying, hey, here's something that I learned along the way. It's, I think, helpful, too, if you're able to say, you know, look, you're doing a good job. You know, as you said there, you know, you are overwhelmed and stressed. And let's just step back here and look at the good things you're doing. And let's talk a little bit more about this thing that you're struggling with. Another thing, along with just that relational approach, is being available. Simply saying, listen, as you're having questions, if I can help, let me know. I won't overstep my bounds here, but if you come to me, I'd be glad to encourage you with some of the things I've learned over time. And so Dr. Chapman and I talk about that in the book, and, you know, we hope that's going to be a blessing, too, to the parents who are further along. They can certainly give a copy of the book, too. We'd love that. Give a copy. I've had several friends saying they're giving copies for baby shower gifts. So you can also give this or other of the many resources that are out there to those new parents to encourage them.
The book is called Things I Wish I'd Known Before We Became Parents by Gary Chapman and Shannon Warden. Brand new from Northfield, which is an imprint of Moody Publishing. There's a lot, Shannon, there's a lot of really practical stuff in this book. And I just want to ask you about one part of it, because I really think this terrific. You actually write about potty training in the book, and that's a big struggle for a lot of parents. I mean, that's a big battle for, and different kids are different about, you know, how, you know, potty training is a big issue. So how can we make that less of a battleground and more of a healthy experience?
That's definitely something we've heard a lot from parents over time. And I totally agree. With my three, each of them have been very different in terms of their learning curve with potty training. Probably the best advice we encourage parents with is just relax. Sometimes it's our expectations that are complicating the training process. It's our feelings of inconvenience, and goodness knows they're there. Stephen and I don't hardly go to eat without getting up 2, 3, 4 times for bathroom trips for the two younger ones. But it's us that's needing to really, you know, be a little bit more flexible, a little more patient with those expectations. When we can get that mindset, then we can, you know, be a little bit more receptive with the creative ideas that are out there. You know, all of the songs we sing, the one friend gives Skittles, her little girl gets a couple of Skittles if she's successful in an effort, even trying, not necessarily just succeeding fully, but even if just trying, she gets those Skittles. And so whatever the creative ideas that are out there, and we offer some of those in the book, the number one suggestion that we offer to parents is just relax. Really watch those expectations. Try to keep them realistic, and potty training will somewhat handle itself once we have that mindset. That takes some deep breaths, though, sometimes, especially right there where your meal is coming to the table and your child says, I got to go to the bathroom. So we try to, Stephen and I laugh about that, and try to remind ourselves, just relax. It's going to be okay.
Talking to Shannon Warden, the book is called Things I Wish I'd Known Before We Became Parents. Things I Wish I'd Known Before We Became Parents. Yeah, parenting is a lot of it is learn as you go.
That's the truth.
You know, learn on the job. Because when you sign up for it, you have your qualifications are very thin. All of us, but I want to ask you something. You got a chapter here. You say that sometimes parents need to apologize. What do you mean by that?
Well, if you live in my house, you would know I mess some things up, and meaning sometimes I may fuss prematurely before I fully understand what's going on, and usually that's out of my own stress level.
Yeah, but that's your right. That is your right.
That's my right.
As a parent.
It is. We do get those rights. Right. And yet, I think we probably carry that. I do. I have carried that too far at times. And so, you know, it is a great model. God requires of us. He gives that great responsibility to us to show these children how to be in the world. And being in the world means being able to say when we got something wrong. So we do. We talk about that in the book. And just, you know, encouraging parents, listen, humble yourself. God asks that of us and tells us, requires of that of us. Humble ourselves, even with our children, in appropriate moments where we really have crossed the line, and it's actually a great model to them of, hey, you should and could do this as you're messing up along the way, and you will mess up. So learn how to apologize early, and that's something we can show our kids, you know, just through those appropriate moments where we can say, hey, Mom missed that, Dad missed that, we're sorry. Let's try doing that over again.
What about using the Because I Said So card? How often do you use that one as a parent?
I try, you know, especially somebody, you write a book and you counsel, and, you know, so that one is in my, it is in my toolkit for sure. But, you know, every once in a while it'll slip out. Listen, it's because I'm a little further along. I know a little bit more. You're going to have to trust me on this one because I said so.
Right. Because I said so also means I'm not going to argue about it with you because I'm tired. And even if I'm wrong, I'm going to say because I said so. Of course, you're not wrong when you're a parent. On most things, you're not going to be proven wrong because you have life experiences to apply to child rearing that the child can't see from his perspective or her perspective.
Absolutely. That's right. And the real key to that is the relational aspect. It's really trying to be as relational much as God is to us, but he still requires us to follow the rules. We get in trouble when we don't.
You know, I remember one time, sometimes as parents, you got to let, now you can't be, you got to be careful about how you do this, but you got to let your children experience something that you said they would experience, but they didn't believe you in order to learn a life lesson. I just begged my parents to let me go see Jaws in 1974. You remember the shark movie?
Oh, yeah.
And, man, I don't know. I was 11 years old. All my friends were going to see Jaws. And mom said, I think I remember this correctly, but mom said, I don't think that'd be good for you to go see that. And so she finally yielded, and I went to see it, and I came home. And I had, and I'm serious about this, it scared me. I had, like, nightmares. You know, didn't want to get in the shower and things of that nature. I'm kidding about that. But, I mean, well, my point was that she used that as a teaching experience to me to say, hey, listen, I'm not as dumb as you may think I am. You may listen to me next time I tell you not to do something. So,
that's right. We can trust. I mean, God has a perfect plan in mind, and we can trust. Life is going to teach us a lot of lessons. We try to be smart as parents as to what we allow our children to be exposed to.
Right.
There are, though, those just healthy, natural consequences that are going to happen. You know, if I choose not to eat what my mom and dad have prepared, I'm probably going to get hungry. And I might reconsider those green beans or, you know, whatever it is. So, those are battles. We're all parents are facing different battles, usually multiple ones every day. And, you know, we just try to encourage folks in this book, Things I Wish I'd Known Before We Became Parents. I also, as does Dr. Chapman, of course, he's touched so many lives through the five love languages. I am a much newer person to ministry, all in all. I certainly have grown up in the church, and I've now been counseling for several years, since 98, but I'm newer in terms of all that he has accomplished. But that's something I'm trying to do in my own ministry. God has given me over the years is encourage parents and women, couples, folks, if they're interested, can find me on the web, of course, shannonwarden.com.
Shannon Warden, WARDEN.com. Shannon is she's a professor at Wake Forest University. She's written a book with Gary Chapman called Things I Wish I'd Known Before We Became Parents, and it's available everywhere books are sold. Thank you, Shannon. We appreciate you being on with us today.
Yes, thanks. It was my privilege.
All right. Thank you very much. All right. So, Ray, how long did you have the empty nest syndrome affect your life?
You know, the boys left and went to college.
Right.
I think it takes, some people say, you know, the next week we started the celebration. I think for us, it took us 3 or 4 years to get acclimated to a new season of life. And now it's, you know, many years later, and the boys are out scattered and married, and we've got grandkids. And I now agree with the people who say the empty nest is a very good phase of life. But it does, it takes a little while to get used to it, right?
Yeah. Took me 3 or 4 days to just struggle with it and not know what
and really
to do.
Wrestle with it.
And
once that weekend
I think it makes a difference whether your kids are still around you or not.
That's right.
You know, yours are spread out across the country. And
that's right.
It makes a difference because you miss being physically with them. But when you can be physically with them.
And then have a little separation.
Any day
too.
Of the week, but still they don't live in your house anymore. It's kind of the best of both worlds.
That's right.
All right. Thanks, Ray. Appreciate you being on with
thanks
me today,
Tim.
Brother. All right, folks, we will see you back here tomorrow for another edition of Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Bible teaching program of Dr. Alistair Begg is straight ahead, and then the news, and then on with more of your day here on American Family Radio. Take care, everybody. We'll see you next time.